Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. On today's show, we have Andrew DiMaggio, lead pastor of Rose Church in Portland, Oregon. Andrew and his wife, Julia, started Rose in 2018 to build a Jesus-centered, authentic community in the heart of the city, and they're doing just that. Andrew's a gifted communicator, a trusted leader known for speaking into real life issues with honesty and hope, and you're going to experience that today. His new book is out, My Heart Hurts, and it explores how we walk with God through pain and suffering, and it's already making a very, very big impact. You're in for a thoughtful and encouraging conversation. For anyone who hasn't had a chance to just simply rate and subscribe to the podcast or leave a comment, would you even take a second to do that before we get into today's conversation? Today's conversation is loaded with a lot of different pain points of life. And so I know and have no doubt that today will bless you. Enjoy today's conversation with Andrew DiMaggio. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Andrew DiMaggio, welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast.
Pumped to be here. So excited. Thank you for having me.
New friend. You are a new friend.
New friend.
New friend. Feels like an old friend. We met just recently, as of yesterday.
Yeah. So real recent. 24-hour friend.
But let's be fair. Fast friends. I was already over at your house last night. Dinner, friends, whole family. Amazing. So glad you're here. People have already heard your intro, so obviously they're going to know a couple of things. One, you recently wrote a book, My Heart Hurts. Excited to talk about this book. And if people are visual, there's a visual. My Heart Hurts, A Guide to the Theology of Pain and Suffering. And that's a resonant spot for myself and so many listening. But before we even get into the book, you lead an amazing church called Rose Church, you and your wife. Yep. Introduce us just real quick to your wife, your kids, and this beautiful community. We're sitting currently in your office, which is super fun.
Yep.
But like, give us a heads up of what God's doing in research, family, all that stuff.
Yep. My wife and I, Julia, she's from upstate New York. She's fully Italian. And we met at school at Bible College. And we have three kids, almost 12-year-old, 10-year-old, and 4-year-old. Yeah. And so we are busy. And if you're wondering that big gap between the 10-year-old and the 4-year-old, it's called COVID got boring, and we joined the many people, many, many thousands of people that had kids during COVID. You know, there wasn't much left to do. So we had no plan to have more than two kids after that. But so we have that big gap. So we have a 12, 10, and 4-year-old, boy, girl, boy.
Yeah.
And life is full and they are crazy. And but it's been an amazing journey. My wife and I started a church in downtown Portland on the southeast side.
Yeah.
7 years ago. We just celebrated 7 years in March. Started with 21 people in my living room. And now 7 years later, and that includes COVID. So it's kind of, up until recently, it was like three churches of 2 years. So we launched, our second year anniversary was March 1st, 2020.
Yeah.
Like we had 2 years of like launching and like starting this church and then 2 years of COVID of online and regathering and mass and no mass and distance, like 2 years of getting beyond what the world was. And then like, now we've had 2 years of like normal church regathering again. So it's been kind of three windows of three churches of 2 years. So, a really amazing, beautiful community in Southeast, mainly Southeast Portland, and up and down the I-5 corridor. But it's been amazing.
Beautiful community is an understatement. Such a beautiful community. Julia showed me yesterday, Bialetti's, the Italian way of making coffee.
Yes.
I personally love Bialetti's. She told me the trick yesterday of putting cinnamon in the grounds before you actually, did you know? Well, you don't even drink coffee.
I drink coffee, dude, but I've heard these things are important.
It was a game changing experience. So if you are a person who loves Bialetti, please put cinnamon in the grounds. Maybe if I'm probably late to this game, but it was a great gift. So thank you. specifically.
Change the world forever.
Yeah. Thank you, Julia. You know, you have a really interesting, beautiful, complicated, like every single person, story and background, because I think everybody has that to an extent. You wrote this book, My Heart Hurts, which, by the way, you can get on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, like anywhere you buy books, just go buy books, go buy the book. But, I have a handful of questions about this, but you come from a ministry family.
Yes.
And you guys have this beautiful expression of church and so many diverse people, so many diverse life stages, lifestyles. Like, you guys are really reaching Portland in a deep way, which I love. But your ministry background and kind of like growing up in the church and your dad, maybe just give us a quick history of the family line that you come from as you're stepping into this leading this church.
Yeah. So I'm the third generation senior pastor, PK. Yeah. And so my dad was a pastor, his dad was a pastor, and my mom's dad was a pastor. So from both ends, both grandparents were pastors. My mom is from Australia, born and raised in Melbourne, Australia, lived there till 20. She's still to this day an Australian citizen, will never become an American citizen. She tells me all the time, I'm not an American, though she's lived here for 55 years. She is Australian. So her dad, his name is Kevin Connor, John Connor, and he was a pretty big and well-known theologian in that part of the world and in a more charismatic renewal theology camp. He, back in the 60s was kind of the first line of charismatics that cared about theology. So I write a lot of doctrine books. And, you know, for many years, he was the number one selling author in all of Australia, secular or not, you know, so pretty well known. And then my dad was a senior pastor for 40 years, two different churches, one for 28, one for 12. And so I was raised in a direct PK home. And then his dad was a small Baptist pastor in Riverside, California. My dad was born in Riverside, lived there for, until he was 20 and then moved to Oregon. So both sides, PK. We have a lot of stories.
So was there a part in you that was against the idea of being in ministry?
Still am to this very day. I was not, I would say theologically speaking, not saved in high school.
Sure.
Did not go to church, played a lot of sports, went to a lot of parties.
Yeah.
And did not attend church really at all. And that was when, looking back, I think the graciousness side of my dad, he never forced me to go. He was like, I think you should go, but like, I have shooting, I have practice, we have film, I have lifting. He's like, that's fine. Like, so he was never like, you will go to church.
Yeah.
You know, I played in college basketball as well. Out of high school and college, my dad missed four games.
Whoa.
I played 2 years in college. Of sports, my dad missed a total of 4 or 5 games. So he would miss church to be my games. And so, did not go to church, was not following Jesus at all. And then when I even started to follow Jesus and started going to Bible college, in college, had no interest really in ministry. It was just like, I don't know what I want to do yet. Let's just go to Bible college. It's cheap. It's here. My dad's church he previously led has a 4-year Bible college. I was like, whatever, I'll come home. I was living in Seattle at that time. I'll go home, do Bible college, see what happens.
Yes.
You know, and then started slowly falling in love with people in ministry. But even up until junior, senior of college, it wasn't, I feel called to ministry. It was, I enjoy this. Let's keep doing this. Like, I like what's going on. I'm still in school. So even up until later in college, there wasn't like, I absolutely feel called to ministry. This is what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
It was just, I like this and I'm kind of good at it and I enjoy it and I have friends that are doing it. Yeah. So let's see what happens. And then after college, getting married, you know, probably wasn't until I was 25 that I was like, I'm going to be in ministry. Like, this is what I'm going to do now.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, though I was very, very against it. You know, the whole PK story is every person sees me and prophesies over me and lays hands and I see, and I'm like, whatever, I don't see that. So I was very, very against anyone saying I was going to be doing, I guess, what I'm doing. So they were right.
I have to say something though, that I think you don't see, and that's okay, because you're not supposed to see it when you're that close to it. Anyone that is listening to this podcast, just pause, go check out Rose Church, the podcast. You guys have a podcast where you can listen. Go download some of your teachings. One of the things I think that you have done a really great job of, and why I'm so excited to highlight you specifically, your story in this space, is, and we were talking about this last night a little bit, but transparency and vulnerability are the currency of our time. They're the thing that people need more than ever. We don't need more prescriptive teachings. Yep. We don't need more, hey, this would be super helpful if you just do these five things. And even though Jesus said these things, you should just do them. And like,
yeah.
I think what's important and where I love how God just designs people for the time that they're in is you have a unique gift to be able to communicate transparently and vulnerably and not make people feel shame at the foot of the cross when I think so many unintentionally do. And I don't think it's even always on purpose. Some people for sure, but there's so many that do not actually like understand how to communicate the heart of Jesus. And
yeah.
It's rare that I get to sit in services at this point, because most of the time if I'm at a church, I'm speaking at a church. And so I don't ever get to just sit and be in the space. And so I was here yesterday and I have to say one of my most favorite things about sitting there was like, I wanted to follow Jesus more after you communicated his heart for his people in a way that was both simple and sincere. And that is not just because you're educated, although you are, or you're a good author, writer because you are. It's actually in a deep way because of anointing that God's put on your life. And I think that it is often those that rebel against the status quo that are some of the most effective in that space. And so anyway, just to affirm you out loud in a private space, in a private room with a conversation that many will listen to, I think it's an important thing to recognize and highlight. Like, you guys have a voice, your wife, and the worship, like the music that she's writing. I was able to hear some of it, listen to some of it. It's crazy stuff. You guys are doing some cool things. And I'm excited for the moment in a few years when people are like, I remember when I heard about Rose and God's just using you guys in a deep way. My heart hurts comes from a deep place.
Yeah.
Take us on the journey wherever you want to start, to some of the pain points that led to some of the deep hurts that you've experienced. And you recently just lost your father.
Yeah.
I lost my dad about 3 years ago. I know we were talking about that, and that's a very tender place, as that was very recent within the last month.
Yep.
But I would just love to hear for you, like, what is the story? Where did this book come from? Where was it born from?
Yeah. So it started, you know, now looking back, you know, it's funny. Sometimes, you know, you don't see where God, his hand was until it's, you know, in the rearview mirror. You're like, there and there and there. And I didn't, you know, so looking back, so it started with, there's a 2 year window when me and Julia, my wife, first got married. And in an 18 month window, my dad got diagnosed with cancer. They gave him like 60 days in the beginning, something like that, 90 days. Like, it was really bad stage 4 cancer. My wife's dad went to prison. A very close friend of ours lost their 3 month baby because of the hospital using incorrect medicine. My dad's best friend died of ALS, who was my boss at the church and an uncle to me, like my dad's best friend for 35 years, 40 years.
Wow.
And one of our best friends, we're told they'll never have children. So
when's the time frame?
18 months, all that, every month, every 2 months, whatever phone call is picking up. It was like, what's happening now? What's happening now? And then I had our first child at the end of that. We had our first child. So started there of me asking a whole bunch of questions about God and the Bible and what is going on. What did I do to deserve this? Why isn't God stopping this? Why did he not get healed? What? And then fast forward a few years later, start church. Church planning is very difficult for many, many reasons that this podcast is not about. And it's hard. And people leaving and coming and all that kind of stuff. And then right now in this very moment, about 2 years ago, a very close friend of mine, at 29 years old, got diagnosed with stage 4 stomach cancer, wildly rare, was told they had 30 days to live, ended up living for like 9 months, post chemo and stuff, was actually doing amazing, but passed away, leaving behind his wife and 1-year-old daughter.
Oh.
3 days after that, one of my best friends, his wife was 22 weeks pregnant, lost the baby. And then the Sunday after that, a very core lady in our church, her son committed suicide. So those three things happened in a nine day window. And then, now of this last month, my dad just died, 35 days ago. And then one of my best friends in all of college, who's on staff at Rose, just got diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. So it's been a long way coming. The book came from me looking back over that window and just thinking to myself for how churches handle suffering, how pastors handle suffering, there has to be a better way.
Yes. Yes.
There has to be a better way that from theological, from pastoral, and from church standpoint, how we respond to people going through pain and suffering. The amount of people I was told, like, your dad doesn't have cancer. Don't confess it. Like, wow. What do you mean? Yes, he does. Like, what did your dad do? What did he do to deserve this? What have you done? Like, you know, there's a lot of stuff happening. Ooh. What did you, you know, God doesn't heal anymore. And all that ended with the apostles and you have to get over, like so many angles and statements and whatever. I'm like, just looking back, even as a younger person back then when my dad first got cancer 12 years ago, there has to be a better way.
Yes.
There has to be a better way that we pastor, we teach, we preach, we counsel people through pain and suffering. And then the story that changed my life is the main story that I wrote and pieced out through the entire book is Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. Matthew 26. And Jesus is in this very, the most human moment of his life. Luke says he's sweating blood. Matthew says he asks his friends to pray three times and they fail him. And he asks Jesus to have this cup pass and God says no. And like you go through this very human story of Jesus.
Yep.
I would submit the most human side we ever see him. And I think what most of Christendom has tried to do is take the fingerprints out of the Bible. What I mean by that is we want to take the humanness. We want to take the authentic side of Jesus. We want to take, like we had our way, we're taking out David sleeping with Bathsheba.
Yeah.
We're taking out Abraham lying about his wife. We're taking out Peter denying Jesus. We are taking out Paul killing Christians. We would remove so much of the text because we have such a hard time, theologically speaking, seeing the fingerprints of the entire narrative of real humans battling real things, including Jesus himself. And reading through that prayer of like Jesus, I'm like, if Jesus is allowed to be human, why aren't we? Like I think theologically speaking, we have a really hard time with the human side of Jesus.
Yeah.
The humanity side of Jesus, him arguing with his brothers, him disobeying his mom, him being bullied at school, him like just his life that we obviously don't get much of. But yeah, so that's where that book was birthed from, was a long list of pain and suffering and loss and grief and where was God and why didn't he do it and what happened and what do I do when I read the Bible and, you know, it says that God is a healer, but I've seen him not do it. And what does it do when Psalm says that he's close to the brokenhearted, but I don't feel him at all. Like wrestling through these verses.
Yes.
Through context. And I was like, so I started reading a lot and I'm like, okay, either to me, I just found both ends. Either every book I read on pain and suffering was highly theological, piecing out every Hebrew and every jot and tittle and every Greek word. But so cold, so non-pastoral. And again, pain and suffering doesn't fit like a shoe. It's different for every single person. So like, I didn't read these like high theological books. I'm like, but what about that? I'd read these like pastoral books. I'm like, so caring, so kind, so soft, not theological at all. Yeah. So thank you for making, like, that was a warm hug, but that doesn't answer my biblical questions. So my attempt in writing My Heart Hurts was finding a line between being deeply theological and piecing out scripture and being incredibly pastoral and loving and kind and gentle. It's always amazing. Everybody has opinions about pain and suffering until you have one. Until you go through it. You know, to quote the prophet Mike Tyson, everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face. You know?
I love that. Like, yeah.
Everybody has a plan.
Yeah.
And everybody has an opinion on how you would have responded to divorce.
Until you get punched in the
face. Until you get punched in the face.
Yeah.
And you respond very differently how you thought.
I'm just thinking as I'm processing this in real time with you. I think one of the things that
and my sister died during that. I forgot about that.
What I love about you,
one little note,
this is anybody listening is going to know this about you. You say what's there, and anybody that knows me knows that that is a dear place in my heart. So thank you.
Forgot casually. One little detail.
Yeah, we're going to come pin in that for just a second. you know, I think it's important to say you're not talking about this like past tense. These things happened and I dealt with them and now I'm here.
Yep.
I think it's important to highlight you are right in the midst of these things. And I'm sure some of these things you've been able to grieve, not even fully, but in part. And then some of these things, it is like so real time that it's, you know, flooding over you. What is the story behind your sister? Because I think, you know, you had mentioned just even your family structure is a unique one because every story and family is different. Would you mind just sharing some of your family's story and dynamics and the story of your sister? We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying. Honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me," God says, "and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you.
So my mom and dad were told they'll never have children. Tried for years. And again, good old church culture in you know, the 60s and 70s, like, you know, prophets and whoever, like, something's wrong with you guys. God is protecting you for having children. God has closed your womb and, you know, all the good church culture of the 60s and 70s. so they're told they'll never have children. So they tried for 6 years and then adopting my oldest sister from Guatemala.
Okay.
And then a few years later, end up adopting the sister right above me named Bethany from a homeless couple that someone in the church knew. Okay. They were both 15. Lived on the streets and they ended up getting pregnant and someone at the church was like helping them in some way and told them. And then they told my parents and they're like, "Hey, well, we want to adopt again." So they ended up adopting my sister, Bethany. And then 5 years later, randomly got pregnant with me. And then 5 years later, pregnant with my sister.
Wow.
So it's two adopted sisters, me, biological sister, big 5-6 year gaps.
Wow.
And so lived very, pieced out from each other. So my sister right above me, Bethany, you know, there's a whole journey, right? Which I'm sure you guys have talked about throughout the podcast of when a parent tells their child they're adopted. There's a lot of literature on when you do it, how you do it, what age is appropriate, how to walk a kid through you are adopted and how and when. So my sister, oldest sister, Nicole, when she was told she was adopted, responded with, "Thank God. Thank you so much. I would have died in a orphanage in the forest of Guatemala," which she would have, from either being malnourished or my oldest sister Nicole has wildly, bad, asthma and like breathing things. She for sure would have died within a few weeks or months in that orphanage in the forest of Guatemala. Okay. So when Nicole was told she was adopted, she was thankful.
Okay.
When my sister Bethany was told she was adopted, it was, "I can't believe someone didn't want me." They responded completely different. "I'm so thankful. And what do you mean someone gave me up for adoption? You tell me someone didn't want me." And Bethany never got over that. Wow. I remember being a young child. And I always remembered memories of Bethany packing up and running away. I'd come home from school and she'd be gone. And I'd come home and find her in the backyard packing clothes to run away. And it was always to go find her parents. She'd be looking in the newspaper and, you know, when the internet came out. You know, some of you are too young to even realize we didn't have that once upon a time, but she'd be Googling, trying to find out. She can find her name on registries. Yeah. And, you know, it was her life mission to find who left her. Wow. And there was always a gaping hole, of being adopted. Wow. She was wildly brilliant. Very witty, very intelligent. Post high school, got into, PSU, was on the dean's list, was getting an English major, but started hanging out with some really just not helpful individuals and became a heroin addict and left home at 18. So I would have been 13. Wow. And never really saw her much after that. Would see her for once or twice a year. Okay. Maybe a Thanksgiving dinner that she came 2 hours late to and then left 10 minutes after being there. Maybe at Christmas dinner, maybe not. And she died at 38. So from 20 to 38 was in and out of rehabs, in and out of people's homes, in and out of either heroin or drinking, or just had a really, really rough go at life. And so for the majority of my adulthood, didn't see her very much. And when I did see her, it wasn't great, or it was complicated, to say the least. And my parents did everything they can to get her in rehabs, and from Oregon, Washington, California, lockdown ones, voluntary ones, right? Because there's a whole world of voluntary and not voluntary, and having lockdown and having access. And we did it all. And then finally in 2016, 17, got her in a very good rehab, lockdown, couldn't leave for a year, got her fully clean, fully out of drugs. She moved to my parents' house, worked for my dad for a bit. And that was for 2 years, from 2018 to 2020. She was attending Rose every Sunday night. She worked for my dad. She lived in my parents' house. My two children at the time were younger and loved her. Doing really, really well. And then COVID started. And when everything locked down, she spiraled deeply. Obviously can't go to AA, can't be out, can't, her apartment where she lived. And she didn't recover. Wow. And so she ended up drinking herself to death in her apartment with her boyfriend that we never knew about, that she was dating for 5 years, that we met at the funeral. He walked up and was like, "Here's your name, Andrew." I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "I was dating your sister for 5 years before." I'm like, "Oh, okay." Oh. So she had a whole nother world that we didn't know about. And so she ended up drinking herself to death in her apartment, having dinner with her boyfriend one night.
Wow.
In 2021.
Wow.
So, yeah, incredibly, incredibly tough journey for many, many levels. But for her, it was interesting going to her apartment. We took away 2 garbage bags worth of empty vodka bottles. She had a suitcase of all of her bills that she just stopped paying for a year. She knew she wasn't going to live to pay those bills. So we found a suitcase worth of bills and, stuff. And on the back of the bills, she'd write letters to herself on the back of these bills. And most of the letters would say, "I don't have a family. I don't have a mom. I don't have sisters. I don't have a real family."
Wow.
She felt very much in the middle space between her adopted family and her real family. Come and find out at her funeral, which her boyfriend told me, she ended up meeting her mom. She found her real mom.
What? Her real mom was still alive?
Yep, still alive. Wow. Who's also an heroin addict and lives in a homeless camp under one of the bridges in Portland.
Wow.
Ended up finding her. Met her for the first time, and I think she saw what that was and who she's become. And that's the thing that actually spiraled her down. And because I think one of the major things that pain and suffering does is it blinds you to what's in front of you. So my sister, Bethany, spent her entire life looking for something she already had.
Yeah, say more about that.
So every letter, I don't have a mom, I don't have a dad, I don't have siblings. Yes, you do have a mom and a dad and siblings. It's just different than the one you thought you wanted. And then when you found the thing you thought you wanted, it wasn't that either. And so she spent her entire adult life looking for something that she already had.
You talked about this yesterday, so feel free to rip from anything that you remember. But the idea, the story of Jesus, the fisherman, the net, the 153 fish. I think that's the right number, 153? Yep.
153 fish. Large fish.
Large fish. That's a good point. That analogy that you use, maybe just share really quick of Jesus breakfast, that heart posture towards the things that we need or think we need and the things that we want. Because I think that in many ways, that's what you're saying. But I think that story like you illustrated just recently really helps connect the dots for maybe some who are chasing after their pain and suffering is real, but maybe some of it is really jaded and they're looking for something that might be in front of them.
Yeah. So there's this really interesting story in John 21 when, Jesus resurrects, he's back to meet the disciples. And then Peter says in John 21, "I'm going fishing." And he goes back, and you and I and most people never just read over that, but it's a statement of him, like, in a way of quitting. He's like, I'm going back to fishing, which Jesus told him in Luke 5, you're no longer a fisherman, you're a fisher of men. And for the 3.5 years that he was with Jesus, he never fished again. So obviously there's no other context. Like, he went from Luke 5, you're not fishing, and he left his nets, left his boat and followed Jesus. Now 3.5 years later, he goes back fishing again. And that wasn't a statement of vacation. That was a statement of disobedience. And how he goes back to the thing that he knew that was the most familiar. And he's on this boat and he's fishing. And he's a professional fisherman. He had a fleet of ships. He worked for his father. I mean, I think everyone's like, Peter was a poor like fisherman. No, he wasn't. He had a business. He had ships. He had a fleet. He was a business, an entrepreneur, businessman. He knows how to fish. He's been raised on the Sea of Galilee his entire life. And now he can't catch one single fish. Like, how frustrating.
Yes.
Like, I'm a professional at this. I did this my whole life. I know what I'm doing. On the same sea, on the same lake, my entire life. And he can catch nothing. And then Jesus comes by and is like, hey, man, you caught anything? And he's like, no. He's like, well, why don't you do the other side? He does the other side and catches 153 large fish. Again, did something happen in the lake? Was it a different lake? Was it a different boat? Did he get a different net? Nothing changed outside of a word from Jesus. That's the only thing that changed. It was the same lake, same boat, same fish, same morning. Do the other side. He does the other side, catches 153 fish, comes back to shore. And then Jesus was already cooking fish on the shore with the charcoal fire. And he's already cooking fish. And I just find it a deeply beautiful picture that the thing that Peter could not catch all night long, Jesus already had in his possession. And so the thing that Peter is looking for, Jesus already had. And the thing that Peter can't get without Jesus, he can only get with Jesus.
Wow.
And I think that's a picture of my sister in some ways. Like, everything she was looking for was right in front of her. But pain and suffering has an amazing way to blind us of the things sitting in front of us.
So tell me, apply that for somebody who still can't, who's feeling the pain of not being able to have kids. You know, the story that your parents told, or losing your dad, right? Or like, maybe apply some of that Jesus having what, and I mean, obviously my mind's, you know, all over the place, but I think even from your story, what are some of the things that Jesus has had for you already that, that you've needed, or maybe you haven't seen right away, if that's a fair question.
Yeah. I think sometimes in my life or others to like maybe put some skin on that thought, like,
please.
Jesus has the thing that we're looking for, but pain or whatever blinds us. Because I think sometimes we're blind to is the form it comes in. Because I think we want Jesus to answer our prayers and questions the way we want it to look. And when Jesus answers it in a form we weren't looking for, we think that's called unanswered prayer.
Oh, I'm going to say it. Preach. Keep going.
Preach.
Glory.
Glory.
Corey Russell, we love you very much.
We love you so much.
Keep going.
I'll answer it this way. You're a young couple. You're at church and you're praying, God, we just need someone to mentor us.
Yeah.
I want the pastor to do it. God, I really believe that the pastor and his wife are going to mentor me and my wife, and they're going to pour into us. And I really believe in this church is for us, that they're going to be the ones. And that's my prayer.
Yeah.
Never happens. But let's say there's this older couple that you meet every other Sunday. Like, we want to get dinner. Oh, we're really busy. Hey, we love to like take you and your wife out. Hey, we're just like, oh, work's really busy.
Yeah.
You know, hey, like, you want to come over? I have some people over for dinner. Hey, we're gone this weekend. And then a year goes by and you go, God never answered the prayer that we wanted someone to disciple us. Yeah, he did. That older couple asked you for dinner 14 times. He was answering your prayer that you wanted to be discipled and poured into by an older couple. You just wanted it through that vein or through that form. And so now you're walking around saying, I live with unanswered prayers because God answered your prayer in a form you didn't like. So that, I think that might be a good picture of like how it's right in front of us. But we just, we didn't want it that way or in those type of people or that form or that whatever it might be, because we wanted God to answer it this way.
Yes.
You know, I'm like Elijah, like it by the brook that dries up. God, feed me, just not through ravens.
Yeah.
Right, Ravens a dirty bird. You can't receive things for Ravens. Like, so I think like we can end up in these dry places of life.
Thank you.
And go, God, you better feed me. And God's like, I sent five ravens.
Hmm.
Well, I don't do ravens. I don't like receiving from ravens. Well, that's how I chose to feed you by that brook. So I think just many times God is actually answering our prayers. We just like the form they came in.
That's a good word and a good reminder. So, I want to highlight something that I think is interesting, that I think is easy to start seeing over time when you experience a lot of pain, like you're talking about. And I think, like I mentioned, we've all had our own journeys of pain at different levels. And Elizabeth and I have had our own journey of pain in different ways. And one of the things that I've started to realize, and something that's so frustrating, is pain. Pain is pain, regardless, right?
Yep.
Interestingly enough, though, there's people who are really suffering in a circumstance.
Yep.
And then there's people who are suffering in their perspective.
Yep.
And I just find it so interesting that there are a lot of moments, and I think this is where it's important to slow down and ask a series of important questions. But to slow down when it comes to the idea of pain and suffering, are you truly suffering in your circumstance? Is it as black and white as, like, literally my father passed, or my sister passed, or these complexities within your family? Those are pretty obvious. Like, there's a suffering element to that. But there's a lot of people that I've met, and you work with people, I've worked with people for so many years, who are just suffering in their perspective. It's that things are not in many ways like they'd hoped, or their ideals have not been met. Therefore, they hold suffering as if it is like as intense as the person who has truly lost their dad. Now, there's no point to compare suffering. That's not even the point. I think the point is to ask the question, like, is this a true suffering, or is it your perspective? Because I think so often God's wanted to heal perspective. And I think when I'm hearing you talking, even you're speaking to that to an extent where God wants to come in and actually heal the perspective and how you view the whole thing and answered prayer. Yeah. And I would just be curious, you know, for you, because you're in the middle of this. Like, this is, like many of us are, this is not the part of the story. What I love about you, and I really do, I love that the book is not closed. You're who you, like, you are who you say you are. I have no doubt. I already know very much about you, but that's also because you are who you say you are, and you're not trying to hold something. So I know you're, like, right in the middle of this mess. It's a messy situation you're in.
Yeah.
What are the things and practices and the things that you are doing in this moment to kind of process and or work through the pain, the suffering, whether that's in your perspective or in actuality? What are some of those things that are keeping you at a place of sanity? Because you got a lot going on.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's real for me right now. I'm sitting in this couch right now, and my best friend's doing chemo right now.
Wow.
Like, I buried my dad 32 days ago. Right? So, like it's
real.
Right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll say a few things. I think some people don't like this, but I think it needs to be said. I think there's a big difference between suffering and life being hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, not everything's suffering.
Mm.
I got bullied at work today and I had to take the max and it took an hour and a half and I'm suffering. No, you're not. Life's hard.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think we just need to, like, get a backbone in some ways.
Mm.
And, like, just life is hard. That's just a fact. That's not all suffering. That's not all evil. That's not all the devil's after me. That's not all I'm in a moment. Just life is hard. Raising children is hard. Mm. Going to work every day for 50 hours a week is hard.
Yes.
Right? Like, doing yard work and keeping up with your home and having a wife and having kids and having friends. Like, life is hard.
Yes.
Adulting is hard for some people.
Yeah.
And they call that suffering. I'm in a moment of suffering. You know, it's called being an adult.
Yeah.
So I think we need to separate those first off, because I think, like, trauma became a very popular word. I'm triggered. Everything's trauma.
Yeah.
Like, well, you know, like, traffic's really bad. And I got cut off. I have to go. We have to go to counseling now. Like, I'm triggered by counseling now. I'm just in a moment of suffering.
Yeah.
What happened? Traffic was hard today. Took me 2 hours to get home, and now I feel triggered by cars. Okay.
Sounds like a person who's had some. You sound like a person who's had these conversations. Keep going.
Mike, that's not suffering. Life's hard. Traffic sucks. Whatever. Yeah. So I think we need to separate those. Sure. Greatly, number one. Number two, what helps me personally a lot is to remind myself I'm not the first and I will not be the last.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we deal with suffering so differently as Westerners than the East and an ancient, because they expected suffering. We think we can avoid it.
Mm.
We're shocked when it comes now. Yeah. Why me? What, me? The ancient world expected suffering.
Yes.
It's a part of life, like finding your next meal. But you know, like most in ancient world, Hebrew world, they didn't name their child till they were 1 year, well, at least 1 year old. They didn't name their baby.
Wow.
Because it was such a high percentage of your child not making it past 1 year.
Wow.
Why name them?
Well, yeah.
They buried most their children from disease, from famine.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, women died so often in childbirth. Mm. Most young men probably were raised without their father post 13 because they went to war at 30 and probably not coming back.
Mm.
Like the way that they viewed life was so different than how we view it.
Yeah.
They knew that suffering was in the bread.
Mm.
It's just, this is a part of life. We're like shocked.
Yeah.
Anyone but me, right?
Yeah.
So I think a big helpful thing for me is reminding myself.
Yep.
I'm not this. There's been worse.
Why do you think we can avoid it? Because you said that
we're rich.
Yeah.
And we have the internet, and the Western world is so far beyond that we think we're too rich, we're too intelligent, we're too far along, we're too down the scientific journey.
Mm.
Can't happen to us because we're enlightened and we're intelligent and we have money. And we can rent cars and we can fly on planes and we can, we're, I think the other side of the world is like, we're still looking for running water and we're still trying to live and not die from pestilence and disease and wars and rumors of wars.
Yep.
So I think the Western world has gotten so rich in facets of life that we're shocked when it happens to us.
Yep. Yep.
Because I can pay my way out.
Yes.
I can relate my way out.
Mm.
I can network my way out of suffering now. And I think the ancient world just viewed suffering so different than us.
Mm.
And again, we all think we have bad days. Go read 1 Corinthians 11, 2 Corinthians 11 on Paul's list.
Yeah.
Shipwrecked twice, at sea for a day, whipped three times, stoned twice, left for like,
yeah.
You start going on the list and you're like, I've had a pretty good week.
Yeah.
Right. So like, I think honestly, a good perspective for me is realizing the world at large, past, present, and future, suffering is involved. I'm not the only one. That's a big thing that I think suffering wants to do to us. No one gets it.
Yeah.
It's just me. No one understands. Like, no, there's a lot of pain in this world and it's been going on and I'm not the only one. I won't be the last one.
As a pastor of a thriving, exciting, spirit-filled church, what would you want to say to those who are experiencing pain and suffering, you know, meaning like, and even the role that the church plays within that, right? Because you've got the role of the church, like the church can help to an extent. There's always like, it's not Jesus. It's not going to solve everything, but I think the church has a huge role. But how would you just even as a pastoral, like as a pastor with that perspective, tell me about that. What are your thoughts on that idea?
Yeah, I think a couple things about that. I think one of the worst divides that ever happened in Christendom is when counseling became anti-biblical.
Yeah. Yes.
So what happened in the year 1500, Martin Luther, 95 Theses.
Yep.
Right? What was a major thing of the 95 Theses? The separation of Catholic and Protestant.
Mm.
Right? Which is so funny about the word Protestant. It's the word protest.
Mm.
All Protestants are angry Catholics. Like, we're just processing Catholics.
Yeah.
What was the biggest thing? I don't need a priest.
Mm.
I am a priest from 1 Peter, and I'm saved by faith, not works. Those are the two major arguments of Martin Luther.
Yeah.
So his big thing was, I don't have to go to a priest and confess my sins. I am a priest and a chosen priesthood, right? Royal nation. I can go straight to God, cut out the middleman.
Yeah.
What happened 250 years post the Reformation, this new job called counseling appeared.
Mm. It was 250 years after. I didn't know this. This is great. Keep going.
Somewhere around there, 225 years.
This, I won't quote
this,
you on it.
This whole world of counseling, therapy shows up.
Yeah.
Why? Because people lost the place to confess and talk to someone about their stuff. Because the whole priesthood thing was taken away.
True,
so we're like, I need to talk to someone. And this whole world of counseling and therapy was birthed because we lost places to confess.
Mm.
And now in certain, you know, circles, counseling is anti-faith. What do you mean? Just pray about it.
Yeah.
And so, but so we've swung now to self-help and self-care and counseling and have these days off. And we've swung so far. So now what we've done is it used to be Jesus, no therapy. Mm-hmm. Now it's therapy, no Jesus.
Absolutely.
And we've swung the other way. And there's two verses that I think greatly matter. One, in James, it says, confess your sin to one another.
Yeah.
And you will be.
That you may be healed.
Healed.
Yeah, there you go.
Then in the other verse in the Testament says, confess your sins to God, and he's faithful and just to forgive.
Yes, yes.
So when I confess to a counselor, I get healing, but not forgiveness. Mm. When I confess to Jesus, I get forgiveness, necessarily not healing. Mm. So I think the church greatly needs to pursue healing and forgiveness. Mm. I get healing when I talk to my brothers and sisters and my counselors and I get healing from that. Yeah. I don't get forgive from that.
Yes.
When I go to my father and I get forgiveness from him, now I can receive healing.
Wow.
And we have to get back to doing both.
Yes.
And so the church got so far from, excuse me, I thought there's a book called Proverbs.
Oh.
What's the whole book of Proverbs? Get counsel.
Yeah.
Get wisdom.
Tons of it.
A lot of it. So we've divorced the two. And so I would say, like, pastoring and now helping people through a lot of pain and suffering is we need both.
Yes.
We need the forgiveness of our father and we need the healing of our brothers. And that's from connect groups. That's from laughter. That's from counseling. That's from altars. That's from worship. So the whole side of healing and then the side of forgiveness. And if I could do both, I'll be a balanced, broken person.
Yeah.
But we want to swing one way or the other.
Yes.
And we need to marry those two things back together. So I think that's a huge, huge thing in the church right now.
Wow.
Is bringing those two things back together.
My heart hurts. I really do encourage you guys, wherever you are, link will be in the show notes. You can click on that. Please go grab this. Andrew, thank you for sharing the story, depositing wisdom, encouraging those here. Thank you for walking this road in a very honest, transparent, vulnerable way, without the bow on it, right? Like the bow is not on it. That's which is most of life, right?
Yeah, it's not there.
But thank you for giving us the perspective that Jesus can forgive and he can heal. I think that word is a great place to just send people even today as they're hearing this of like, those are two things that we all need, like in every way, no matter where suffering in your perspective or in your reality or in your circumstances, we need to heal and we need forgiveness. And so to anybody listening, get the book. If you're in Portland, visit Rose Church.
Yeah. It's come hang out.
Great crew. But Andrew, thanks for being on the show today.
Dude, absolutely loved it. Thank you for having me.